From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. South Korea is famous for its video gaming industry, with Korean players routinely dominating esports competitions. But there is a certain amount of infamy as well, with news stories every once in a while about extreme cases of video game addiction among the youth in Korea and around Asia, which highlight the number of hours that some players log into their favorite game and the detrimental health effects of this pastime. However, not everyone agrees on the exact definition of video game addiction, or even whether there's such a thing at all. Mark Zastro, a science journalist based in Seoul, recently tackled this question with a great article for the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in which he explored this debate about what can really be considered an addiction and how the United States and Korea are taking quite different stances on this issue. So I'm here with Mark to talk about his article on some of the things Korea is doing to combat possible negative side effects of video game addiction. And I use addiction with quotes there since there is this debate about that exact term. So Mark, I want to really thank you for sitting down with me and talking about this. Before we get into it, could you begin by introducing yourself and what you do here in Seoul?
Sure. My name is Mark Zastro, and I'm a science journalist, a freelancer. I work here in Seoul. I've been here for about 2 years now, and it's been a lot of fun. I get to cover a lot of things that happen in Korea that are related to science that not a lot of other journalists maybe get to cover. Obviously, a lot of people cover technology, but to cover sort of basic research, basic, you know, physics and biology research that's going on in Korea, that's really fun.
So part of the reason I wanted to talk to you is because I had never heard about this debate over the term addiction, and I definitely had never heard about it, how it was being used particularly to refer to gaming. So could you give us the background first on this situation? What are the two sides and what is the disagreement here?
Sure. Well, when I first started working on this story, I didn't realize how, you know, it's not just about whether or not video game addiction exists, but it's also, there's this huge debate about what actually is addiction. I had no idea that before 2013, if you look at the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, which is, you know, kind of the Bible of mental health produced by the American Psychiatric Association, they did not actually define addiction before 2013. The word addiction does not even appear in the previous edition. And the reason for that, well, one of the reasons for that is that it's such a fraught and loaded term, right? To call something an addiction means calling someone who has that disorder an addict. And that can be so stigmatizing, which is something that, you know, any mental health disorder has the potential to be, right? If you name it, it can produce a stigma. For example, homosexuality for a long time was considered a mental disorder. So this whole idea about whether or not video games are or can be an addiction, it really gets to the heart of this whole debate about addiction itself and what that means. But just strictly about video game addiction, I mean, there is a lot of research over the past maybe 15 years or so that looks at whether or not things besides substances can be addictive. And so that's really, you know, if you're going to make video games an addiction, you have to accept that a behavior can be addictive in the first place. And that really is, you know, until 2013, not even alcohol abuse was considered an addiction. So that's a big step. And if you look at the so-called behavioral addictions, which is what your video game addiction would be, right now the only one that is accepted as an addiction is gambling. And the reasons for this is that, you know, there's been this research over the past 15 years that shows that you can become addicted to the reward of a behavior. And some of this research, which has gone on at the National Institute of Drug Abuse in the US, uses, you know, MRI scans to look at how the brain is working and what parts of the brains are being activated. And what they found, people like Nora Volkov and others, is that even though an addiction is traditionally associated with a substance, and we would think that, oh, something about alcohol or something about that drug is rewiring the brain, in fact, it's actually the reward of the pleasure of doing that drug that is what is addictive. It's the reward that is activating your brain's reward system, and it's rewiring your brain to want to seek that out over and over again. It's a kind of a, you know, almost a Pavlovian response. And so what Nora Volkov found in one of her studies that she did with her colleagues was that, you know, people respond, drug addicts respond to just the sight of a syringe in the same way that they do to the drug itself in a neurobiological sense. So all of this research that is going into this is kind of, you know, coming down on the side of, well, video games could be an addiction if they activate the reward pathway in the same way. But it's not entirely clear that that happens yet. We don't have a lot of MRI studies done on video gamers and how their minds react. So that's one argument against it then, is do we have an accumulation of evidence that is strong enough to really put this into the same category as you would a drug, as you would gambling. And then, you know, another big reason to maybe be a little hesitant about classifying it as an addiction is, again, going back to this issue of the stigma. And if you're going to call all of these, you know, a lot of teenagers, kids even younger, if you're going to start calling them addicts, is there a derogatory connotation there that we don't necessarily want to use that could be actually harmful, and could we be pathologizing normal behavior? So those are kinds of the broad, it's a long answer, but those are kind of the broad outlines of the debate.
To zoom in a little bit more on Korea, what is the status of the debate here in Korea? Are they having the same kinds of arguments that you just described?
So, I mean, interestingly, I think the debate is maybe a little bit less heated here because by and large, the government at least sort of just accepts that this is happening. Whether or not it's an addiction, they see, rightly or wrongly, that kids are playing these games and that they are they believe that it's leading to adverse outcomes, that they're not studying, they're not, you know, socializing in a healthy way. And so the government here is quite willing to give funding to researchers who are trying to cure this. And certainly these researchers, many of whom I've spoken to and run, you know, sort of rehab clinics for these kids, not even all of them believe that it's necessarily an addiction, because you could still call it a disorder, but it may not be classified as an addiction. It could be an impulse control disorder. It could be, you know, other kinds of disorders. So whether or not it is an addiction, you know, one clinical psychologist told me, it doesn't matter to me what the definition is. What matters to me is what's happening to these kids and how can I help these kids. So I think whether it's because there are more cases here, because it's more prevalent, or whether just as a society, that idea that video game addiction is a social harm has become, you know, just has become more prevalent. I think people here are researchers that I've talked to are actually not as concerned about the debate as they are, say, in the West, where it is, you know, the American, European researchers I spoke to, this is a huge debate raging within the community.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think in the end, people are generally trying to get to the same outcome, which is to help people who need it.
Right.
But whether you need to have a particular term or not, it's really interesting to see the different ways that these researchers or, you know, doctors, whoever, are approaching the same issue. So sticking with this example of Korea, we were talking before the interview about the popularity and the prevalence of gaming and esports. I mean, huge competitions here in Korea that are televised and streamed online with tons of interest. Do you think that that affects how society here sees video gaming and the possible addiction to it?
I think there's definitely, there's more acceptance of, of esports as a thing. Esports was a thing in Korea, long before it was a thing in the US and in Europe. I think that level of mainstreamness does, certainly it means that, kids are more likely to idolize gamers as heroes that they want to emulate. It creates a whole pastime. You can follow esports and you can go to matches and attend them in the same way that you might a traditional sport like baseball or football or what have you, which probably would not raise as many eyebrows, right? So I think it does lead, it leads my friends and people that I know and kids that I know, to see this as something that's a little bit more mainstream. But, that doesn't mean that there aren't people who still view this as something that could be harmful, right? I mean, as with so many things in Korea, there's such a generational gap. Sometimes it's older Koreans' parents who, are just as concerned about these kinds of things as Western parents would be.
So in your article, you mentioned some new facilities and new resources that are popping up to deal with this problem. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so in Korea, there are several different facilities that run rehab clinics. And I mean, it's almost, it's almost something that, several researchers can do as a part of their research, because, if you're going to be researching therapies, you have to have some way to test them. So it's not like these are necessarily standalone buildings or complexes the way that some rehab centers have been that have been documented, say in China. For example, in China, there are, are several that are, they're actually part of an army hospital. The most famous one, Daxing, is notorious for being run like a military-style boot camp. And there are stories of brutality towards these patients, these kids who are patients and sent there by their parents to try to cure them of this addiction. In Korea, it's a little bit less, it's a little bit more relaxed, I guess you could say. They aren't necessarily separate facilities. One of the researchers that I talked to who does run a, you could say, rehab clinic, operates out of the National Mental Health Center in Korea, which is in northeastern Seoul. And so kids just come in, classes of, 20 or 30 at a time. And he has his own sort of therapeutic program that is based around basically, sort of digital detox, taking away kids' smartphones, making them read, making them, talk to each other. And it's actually, he derives inspiration from actually a German science fiction novel, which I can't even remember the name of it right now, but he has his own personal theory about why kids become addicted is rooted in their perception of time. He says that because kids, play games for tens, hundreds of hours and they feel like only a few hours has passed, that he thinks that there's something going on with something neurological happening with their perception of time. And so he sort of constructed his program around trying to get kids to reclaim their sense of time. He does not, and most of the people that I've talked to, they haven't necessarily produced peer-reviewed studies yet about this, just because these are so new. You have to have several cohorts, several groups of children come in to do this program and then follow up with them to see whether or not these are actually having an effect. So in a sense, it's kind of, it's like a wild west out there in terms of what researchers are doing to try to cure this thing that may be an addiction.
So I know it might depend on the facility, but how exactly are they identifying these people? Often kids, I think, kids seem to be the ones that are being called video game addicts or being suspected of having an addiction. But there are some adults as well. But especially with the case of kids, is it just a matter of a parent seeing a problem and deciding to check their kid into a facility? Is it self-reported? How are people getting help if they need it?
Yeah, it's almost, well, it's mostly parents bringing their kids in, not surprisingly. There are some cases, though, you know, where people in their 20s, 30s are coming to these and checking, basically checking themselves in. But the majority of cases, I think, are coming from, you know, parents who are worried about their kids.
It's really interesting that you mentioned this theory about time, because one of the researchers that you cited has this theory about video games bleeding over into real life, which was really fascinating. And this goes along also with VR, virtual reality, that a lot of people are worried that with more VR, we risk an increase in addiction to games or a possible separation from reality, only, you know, wanting to be in a game. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Right. So this phenomenon of games sort of bleeding into reality is actually, it's been studied and it has a name. It's called game transfer phenomenon, or GTP. And it was first identified or first called that by a researcher named Angelica de Ortiz-Gortari. And her whole master's thesis was about this phenomenon that a significant amount of gamers report sensations related to the games that they're playing in real life, whether that's hearing sounds or noises or seeing things that may be in the game, like sort of the crosshairs, say, of a first-person shooter appearing in real life, or this sense that real life is a game and they have an instinct to do something that they might do in the game. Like, for instance, she was saying that she wanted to, the way she first became aware of this is because she experienced it herself, and she was in a supermarket and she was looking down the aisle at something and she instinctively wanted to press the zoom button, as you would in a first-person shooter, to, you know, to zoom in with, you know, whether it's your rifle scope or to look down the barrel of the gun to get a closer view. Of course, you know, she couldn't do that because it was real life, and she thought, well, what is this? And are other people experiencing it? And as she looked into this, you know, significant amounts of gamers, you know, in the teens percentage-wise, have experienced this. And the more, you know, she got into it, the more gamers started to sort of thank her for making them realize that this actually is fairly widespread, and it's actually fairly normal too. So then the question becomes, is that a marker of addiction? Can you use that to diagnose people, to say that, oh, if you start experiencing these things in real life, you might be addicted? That's actually what the South Korean Ministry of Culture did, because they actually produced a public service announcement. I don't know if you've seen it online, but it actually is sort of, you know, a fun, you know, quirky 30-second spot showing you know, video games bleeding into real life, and, you know, video game fights happening in real life, and you know, item boxes appearing in real life, and that kind of thing. And, you know, saying if you experience these symptoms, you know, you may be addicted to video games. Now, the thing is, that is not supported so far by the facts. We don't know, we don't have evidence yet to say one way or the other. And the Ortiz-Gortari is the first to say this. They haven't done neurobiological studies to see, okay, is that associated with the same kind of, you know, addictive pathways? Does that mean that people who have GTP are more likely to also suffer in other metrics of well-being? So far, the preliminary results are no. I mean, that this is a fairly normal thing to happen to gamers. So then the other thing is, you know, does this become stronger with virtual reality? Is that only going to increase the blurring of the lines between, you know, reality and computer games or video games? And I think sort of the stereotype we have is that it will, that, right, we will become lost in these games. It will be like the Matrix. And certainly if you play them, It kind of feels that way, right? I mean, that's what everyone says. And if you've done it yourself, I've gone to VR cafes here in Seoul and fought zombies in games with my friends. And it's fun, and it does feel very, very real because it engages all those senses, you know, visual and, oral, what you're hearing, and it's completely enveloping and it's so immersive. But whether or not that actually produces an addictive element is totally unknown. So far people don't really like to play VR for extended periods of time. I don't mind doing it for, you know, half an hour or an hour, but to do it for the number of hours that you need to in order to be addicted, just because of the fact that it's not that comfortable, and after a while you get motion sickness. We don't really know yet if VR will lead to an increase in addiction.
Okay, great. We've covered a lot of ground. I know that as researchers continue to look into this and establish that body of research that you've been talking about throughout, learning more about how this is actually working in people's brains or how it's working in society, there will be a lot that we can keep talking about. But for now, before we go, is there anything else that you think people should know?
I think, you know, one of the big things that I took away from reporting this piece is just how much, as you said earlier, everyone is working towards the same goal. Everyone wants to see, you know, pain and suffering that may be experienced by kids, by them when they become adults later, you know, if there are detrimental effects to true addictive behavior. Nobody wants to see that. Everyone wants to try to reduce that. But still, we have so many questions about whether or not these do lead to detrimental effects. And it becomes very difficult to actually try to define some kind of criteria in order to diagnose them. And that's where a lot of the debate is right now amongst psychiatrists, is it even possible, or are we going to be able to come up with universal criteria to diagnose this? And, you know, it's a lot harder than just coming up with a checklist and seeing whether or not people have these things. One of the sort of classical symptoms of addiction, as it, you know, was formerly thought of, is: do you conceal your behavior in some way from other people? And, you know, I remember the first time I went to a StarCraft match in Korea, I saw all these, you know, kids sitting up in front in the studio audience, you know, screaming and cheering for their favorite gamers. And then when the camera crane in the studio would, you know, come and swoop over the crowd, they would throw their hands up and cover their faces, because they didn't want to be on TV, because this was in the middle of the afternoon and their parents might see that they were skipping class to go watch StarCraft. And according to, you know, sort of the traditional view of addiction, well, that would be a marker of an addict, that they're concealing this behavior in some way. I mean, they're watching it and not actually playing it, but still, that there's this sort of issue of if that is concealing, is it something that is truly dangerous, something that is pathological, or is that just normal? Is it normal for kids to want to skip school and to go play video games? You know, me personally, I would say, yeah, that sounds like pretty normal behavior to hide from your parents. So there is so much of this comes down to adults arguing over, you know, what is best for children. And that, as with any other kind of issue where that is the dynamic, it's very fraught. And so, you know, there's definitely no consensus in the field right now as to whether or not, first of all, whether or not video game addiction is a mental health disorder. And second, if it is a disorder, do we classify it as an addiction? And I know, you know, we talk about it so loosely as if it already were a thing. But, you know, I guess if there's one takeaway, you know, I hope people realize that it's a lot more complicated than that right now.
Well, I really want to thank you for sitting down with me and talking about this. Again, something that I think people hear about or think they know about, but maybe haven't thought in a deeper way about the issues related to gaming or addiction or lack thereof. So I really appreciate you taking your time to explain some of those complexities here today.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you're getting your podcasts. And we'll see you here again next week for another great episode.